I want to welcome Patrick Kilpatrick to Upcoming Disc. Just read your book, I'm Dying for a Living, and it's something like I've never read before. How are you, Patrick?
I'm very well, thanks. It's great to talk to you.
Well, I have to tell you, the style that you've written in is very unique, and I got to tell you honestly, it took me a little bit of time to get used to it, but when I did, it was actually kind of cool, because you're writing almost, it seems like a stream of consciousness. It's much more like a conversation than a written word. Was that something you attempted, or is that just your style?
You know, as the book was going along, and that's really what I was kind of aiming for, because one of the things I was trying to do was sort of, I describe it as pay homage to the literature gods.
Right.
And so I was trying to appeal to those who appreciate literature as much as Hollywood salacious tales.
That's right.
Things like that. So I've been very appreciative of the comments we've had about the writing and all of that. So, you know, I probably overly consider that modern audiences will get bored don't do something that's compelling.
Well, that's kind of a shame, though. That's kind of a shame if that's true.
Well, God, I don't think it's any secret that modern audiences, both cinematically and in literature, or writing, or media, news,
yeah,
the attention span of people is very, very short.
Yes.
You know, my son said to me, "Why do you break it up so much and use small paragraphs and
right,
single sentences?" And I think that's because people see a large block of copy and they just head south.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even bother.
Yeah.
Certainly that's true of social media, so I was
right,
I was attempting to do something that would keep people moving along.
Well, and it does that, and more than just the style, I found that your level of engagement to be a little higher. I think you let people in a lot more than most people who most celebrities who write these kinds of books are. You seem to be much more honest. You're willing to admit the foibles as well as the successes, and you do it in such a visceral way that I found that the book is compelling, in that you almost feel like when you're done, almost tired, because I feel like I lived some of that.
Well, I guess that's very good. That's a compliment, because I think good films and good writing should do that.
Yeah.
And draw the person in and let them visually see it and feel it. So,
mm-hmm,
you know, the problem I have with a lot of films nowadays is they're so technically savvy and so special effects scale that
sure,
there's little emotional engagement, whereas the wonderful films that I like, books that I like, are the ones that emotionally engage you. They either make you laugh or cry,
right,
or something.
Yeah.
So I hope I've done that.
Well, yeah, I think that's true. And the biggest take I probably got from what I maybe got to know of you reading it is you appear to have this uncanny sense of understanding your place in the life, of those turning points. You seem to have this ability to kind of know where you're at, which I think most of us don't have. You know, you talk about several times when you made a choice that, you know, like when you change your careers from the writing, you do that. And, you know, the time about the paralysis with the accident, there's just some moments where you show that you're right, where even at the time you were at the crossroads of something, and you seem to have a great amount of awareness of that. Where does that come from?
I really don't know. I think some of us are born with that. I mean, the moment that I honestly had a very, very early sense that we're only here, and to, I think, a greater degree than a lot of people, that we're only here for a very, very short time.
Yeah.
Even if you live to 114 or 120 or whatever it is, that it's breathtakingly short.
Yes.
Is there any, look, I'm 69 years old.
Right.
I don't know where the hell it went. I just want to make sure that whatever period of time I have here is, I've exercised it in, this is a strange word, but as ethically as I possibly can,
right,
within the context of my circumstances. And I don't know. I can certainly say that my earliest inspirations either those people who fought in World War II or the characters in literature and the writers.
Right.
They didn't live long, long lives. They lived very vivid lives.
Yes.
And that was important to me to do that. Sometimes to live vividly is to slow it down and to be as elegantly slow as possible, just like
right.
the case of a ballet or a movie. But you want to be make sure that, what was that T.S. Eliot thing? Most people live, you know, tiny teacups of desperation.
Yeah.
But I never wanted to live like that.
Well, it doesn't sound like you did. But when I even mean being aware of yourself, there's one point where you talk about during the time of the Kent State riots during the Vietnam War protest that you had this rock and you were ready to plant it on a cop's head. And then you show this awareness that, not now in retrospect, obviously we'd all have it, but you seem to have had the awareness at the time. And you kind of take us through, this is the, you know, this is what my life would be if this happened. And just most of us aren't capable of doing that. And that's the part that I mean. It's just this idea of knowing exactly where you are in that moment. And that's rare. And it's got to be a blessing and a curse sometimes.
I didn't know that it was so rare. But I'm acutely aware of self-accountability.
Yes.
You're going to be defining yourself. In fact, maybe a lot of people don't really realize that they're self-defining themselves every moment of every day. So I try to do that. I also try to, you know, we either have a choice to be a devil or an angel,
right?
Try to be an angelic force.
Sure.
Without the halo. I'm talking about trying to be as positive as you go along and
right.
be just as fair to.
And you know what? Accountability is sure a big part of it, and that comes also from what I've gotten from your worldview from this book. And quite honestly, what surprises me is that you've managed to be true to the things you believe in, which aren't necessarily popular in Hollywood these days, as any 10 minutes of an award show will show you, and yet you've still managed to have this success. I look at your filmography, and you've got like 15 things, you know, either coming out or at least in the process of coming out, and that's rare. How do you manage to be so honest, to be so direct, but yet still maintain such a ability to work? Because some people can't.
Well, one of the things I've noticed is that if you actually speak up, yes, you're going to alienate a fair amount of people here.
Right.
But you're also going to have other people who be drawn to you.
Yes.
So first of all, the negative of speaking up is very hard to measure because they don't call you and say, hey, we're not going to give you this television series.
Right.
Because of your political view or your... Mm-hmm. your ideas, but so you can't really measure that. What you can measure is the positive, the peoples, the companies, the colleagues that come out and say, you know, I really appreciated that, and I really believe as you do, and so I'm going to bolster and support whatever it is that you're working on.
Right.
So I don't have any regrets for that because I've got great positive things. From speaking up, I think if more people realized that that was what was going to occur generally, they would not be as fearful to speak up. I mean, I'll go and do an interview at a television station, and the production people who are doing the television show will come up and say, thank God for you guys. If we open our mouths, we get fired and stuff like that. So I think a lot more people... That's one of the reasons I wrote the book.
Yeah.
Many reasons. But one of the reasons I wrote the book was to establish that not everybody, and I've been doing this for a couple of decades now, not everybody in Hollywood, by a long shot, feels as the kind of people, I call it the Meryl Streep crowd, or the, you know, the Stephen Colbert crowd.
Right.
In the case of the Emmys. Tens of thousands of production people and other people here actually have those views. It's not like everybody is out of their minds here.
Right, no, I agree.
But we get this one-sided view of Hollywood
Yeah.
Of a hierarchy. And that's not really the case across the board in Hollywood.
Well, and it's fortunate that it's not. But for some of us, you know, watching, I used to love watching things like the Academy Awards, because I remember a time in my life when it was actually a celebration of cinema. It was a celebration of things that was going on. It's no longer that. It's become, you know, a political rally, and I can't take it. So I hate to say I don't watch the Oscars anymore, and I'm part of a voting group for CEFCA. So, you know, I feel like something's been taken away from me because it's not what it once was. But you found a way to turn that around and create a positive for you, and that's remarkable.
Well, I think part of not everybody has the ability to write, and not everybody has the ability to teach. So I call it curse of a liberal arts education. I actually have a lot of things that I can be doing if one thing slows down or shuts down or whatever.
Right.
The other thing was, if you look at the founding of our country and my father's generation and things. Those people laid their lives on the line.
They did.
For whatever it was. And many suffered greatly for it, for whatever they believed. And I love this country so much that I just couldn't tolerate it when I got here and I saw some of the things were going on. Really, no acting career is worth the subjugation of whatever your central core beliefs are.
Yeah.
I also think that a lot of these liberal belief systems here are very shallowly held. It's not that deep. If you go into it articulately and discuss it with a good amount of people, then you can arrive at something that's got some common sense to it. But if you abdicate the whole discussion and just, let's take the NRA.
Right.
In large measure, I think the NRA wrote off Hollywood in California a long time ago.
Sure.
I don't agree with that. I believe that they should engage Hollywood, that they should engage California, using the same techniques that Hollywood uses to sell anything.
Yeah.
And do it skillfully and with a lot of fun. The key thing is to sometimes have fun with this stuff. what I try to do.
Sure.
I don't take my political views onto a set.
Right.
Unless I'm attacked on the set, and then I would engage the debate as simply and as principally as I could.
Mm-hmm.
So the central thing when I'm on a set is to deliver the goods as an actor.
Exactly.
Or whatever I'm doing. So producer's consultant or whatever the job is to do. Generally a mix of those things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for everybody. It's just like acting isn't for everybody.
Sure.
Speaking your mind isn't for everybody. But there are great benefits for speaking your mind.
Yeah. Well, I tend to agree with that. And speaking of speaking your mind, it's not just on a political basis. It seems like you're very open and honest in the book. I'm touched by your descriptions of your mother and some of the mental illness that she suffered through her life. And I even get, and you can tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I get a little sense that there's a part of you that sometimes either worries or concerns yourself that's in there somewhere. Is that true?
About her? No. I'm not worried about the issue. I think if there's any tragedy about the situation with my mother, I think the true tragedy is both for the fact that she was never able to find, because of my father's success in business and because of all of that, the elements of paradise for the family were there. So the tragedy is that the paradise of a family was never allowed to blossom and burgeon.
Yeah.
So that's the sadness there.
Right.
The other thing for her, I don't think she ever was able to really achieve the happiness that she might have gotten.
Right.
She had sought treatments and acknowledged what was going on and all of that. So those are the tragedies. Myself, I don't look back on any kind of tragedy. To some extent, I believe that we get the parents that we're supposed to get, and you have to take the positive and you have to remake the negative.
Yeah, obviously.
I don't believe in negative.
Right.
You know, I believe in, as I said in the book, God's pivots, that allows you to fulfill your larger purpose here on the planet.
Yeah.
So I think it's sad that my brothers and sisters and I and my mother and father were not able to exist in the level of love.
Right.
And sharing that might have been possible because, as I said, the elements were all there.
Yeah.
Because of this situation not being addressed, it didn't happen. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I can have great relationships with my brothers and sisters.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that all of that time wasn't lost and all
mm-hmm.
of that. But on the other hand, what's the positive? The positive is you develop a clear independence of spirit.
Obviously.
And you have to find your own way, which is the goal of every growing individual.
Yeah, it's definitely left an impression on you from the way the book's written. I also get this idea that your relationships with women have in some way, you know, had this as be part of what hangs over them. Is that true?
Well, certainly in the beginning it did. I mean, a psychologist once said when I talked to them that I didn't trust anyone. Now, I think a healthy wariness while you're actually having a larger sense of open-heartedness with the world is a good thing. Beyond the age of 22, you have to sort these things out. It certainly did. I don't blame in any way, shape, or form my mother for my relationships with the women in my life, but I'm very lucky. The process of being a writer and an actor was not only physically, but emotionally and mentally healing process.
Mm-hmm.
Could I have done it faster? Sure.
Yeah.
Could I have evolved faster? Sure. But I feel like I'm lucky. You know, there's an old expression. Every actor is healing himself or herself. And I think that's true. You know, Olivier and all these guys had strange upbringings. And Marlon Brando, and I'm certainly not comparing myself to those people, but what you're doing is you have to address these things. Now, some people address it poorly. They become alcoholics, drug addicts, whatever. Yeah. I always had athleticism that I could fall back on, and so that was a great benefit.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there's no question it colors your experience, but it's important for you people to leave that behind.
Yeah.
Let's say, if you're raised in a particular kind of religion, you have to take the positives of that religion, and you have to make it your own for your own life.
Right.
And not carry on this cycle of whatever that's going on.
Well, yeah, I think you're right, because I think one of the problems that we have today is this idea of victimhood, that everyone is somehow a victim all the time, and that's not helpful. Even if it's true, it's not helpful. And I get the impression that that's what you kind of overcame. There are many times you could have called yourself a victim. The issues with your mother, the fact you were in, you know, this bad car accident left you almost paralyzed for a while, didn't even know if you were going to come back. I mean, you've had these hardships to come back, and there are people out there that wouldn't blame you for saying, you know what, I'm a victim of this, I'm a victim of that, but you don't do any of that.
That would be nonsense.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's not even intellectually honest or not even truthfully honest. We're given the circumstances that we're given, and how we respond to that is what's the measure of us. And so, no, I don't. Look, I'm getting older. The experience of getting older is a challenging one.
Sure it is.
Physically and everything else. But you have to revel in that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find whatever grace that is, there is. And there is grace to be found in that situation.
Yeah.
Some of it's pretty funny. Some of it is really interesting. I actually get a great joy out of overcoming the obstacles of getting older and developing stylistic mannerisms.
Right.
In which to have fun with that.
Sure.
So, yeah. I mean, I've seen people who had the same car accident I did. They became, you know, frail people and died.
Yeah.
That's a choice as much as anything else. Now, if you didn't, one of the things I got very positively, I think, from my DNA, my parents, was not to function that way. You know, you pick yourself up and you move forward, and pretty soon you revel in that. Courage is a habit. Happiness is a habit. Joy is a habit. And if you're not getting it, get down on your knees and ask God or the universe or whatever you believe in to give it to you.
Well, there are too many people that would look at what you went through and wonder, reading this book, where's the self-pity? And it's just not there. It's not anywhere in this book.
No, I don't believe in that. I really don't believe in that. I mean, Fitzgerald said we're all doomed.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't really believe in that, in a sense. We may all be doomed, but there's triumph if you triumph over the doom.
Right.
How you do that is an individual thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to struggle against whatever the thing is. And the truth is, everybody has these challenges.
Yeah, sure.
You know, people could look at me and say, he's a big guy, he came from a privileged economic family, he has no problems. That's so far from the truth. You look at a guy like Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Barely survived his childhood.
Right.
And struggled his whole life with asthma and all those things. And look what he accomplished.
He turned it into a strength.
That's because of his self-made energy and his drive. And there are people who... I saw a documentary the other day. I'm fascinated by these people who have Mount Olympus. I'm thinking Teddy Pendergrass.
Right.
Here's you're talking about a guy who is the epitome of entertainment, sexuality,
right,
accomplishment, and skill set, and then in one fell swoop, he's paralyzed. And what did he end up doing? He went through a period of self-pity, but he also ended up having 6 albums, 4 of which went gold, and to triumph over what had been dealt him. And that's a pretty severe set of circumstances. So,
well, and that is...
Stephen Hawkins comes to mind.
Yeah.
You have to pick yourself up no matter what you're going through and try to fight against it.
And I think that's the theme to me of the book, and for people who should read this, is that's the overall message is overcoming. You go through a litany of just bad luck, bad things happening, but it never ends in poor, pitiful me, and I really applaud you for that. And I think it's the kind of message that more people should read, because we don't get enough of that in our literature, in our films, in our music. We just don't.
Well, God bless you. One of the issues I had with Hollywood was the whole Iraq-Afghan war.
There
was one movie from our finest directors that actually told about the sacrifice of America's military forces, and I happen to know from visiting those countries that probably 50% of our troops there were doing civil affairs things like building bridges, building schools, and happy to do so. So where were our Hollywood directors and our creators during that period? They were absent.
Yes.
And I think that's a disservice to the country, and it's a disservice to young people.
Yes, it is.
Because what was happening breeds cynicism of our American institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Should we look at our American institutions with a fair amount of wariness and ever vigilance?
Right.
Absolutely. But is there something to admire in American institutions and the American experiment? Absolutely. It's unique to the world, and if America goes dark, the world is not going to be a better place.
Well, I liken it to the Roman Empire. You know, people talk to me about the power of the Roman Empire wasn't found to me in the things they accomplished. To me, the true power is in what became of the world when they were gone. It's when something's lost that you realize just how important, how much influence it was. So to me, the impact of that 1,000 years when it was gone tells me more about the strength and necessity of it than what it did while it was around. And I think the same is true of us.
I think so, too, although we're not crucifying anybody.
No, of course not. I didn't mean that in a form of policy. I just meant in
no,
a form
I know.
of
I know.
in you know, how important we are to the world. You know, people complain about, oh, we don't want people across the bars. That we give more to tragedies. We help more people than has ever been helped in the world. And without it, you know, I don't even want to think about it. I don't think other people want to think about it either.
It's true, and I think we should all take some pride in that.
Yes.
Foster it.
Yeah.
So, hence the Liberty Patriot. One of the points of the book is that anybody can be a patriot. You know, if we're not a culture that believes in redemption, that believes in people aspiring to our better selves, then we're probably in deep trouble.
Yeah. You know, I also learned from the book that we shared kind of an acquaintance and even a situation happening at the same time, and that is your buddy William Malone. I was actually, you know, with him at the time. I, you know, we tried our best to help push Parasomnia, which you, of course, were in. I did several interviews. He was kind enough to include us in his Fangoria ad, quoting us and things we said, and I was very supportive of that film and him, and you helped me with the situation. He kind of fell off the planet for a while. I couldn't get a hold of him. Even people were coming to me and saying, hey, have you heard from William Malone? And you filled in a page for me because I never knew what happened in the aftermath of the whole Parasomnia thing. I love the film, and we gave it rave reviews here at Upcoming Dis. And like I said, he was kind enough to share interviews with me and other assets from the film. And then he kind of disappeared, and I appreciated learning a little bit more about what happened, what he did disappear.
Well, he's a great guy and a really good creator.
He is.
I've enjoyed working with him several times, and I actually think there are some... a lot of times I have to improv the intelligence or the elegance of a particular character.
Right.
It's not there in the script. But that wasn't the case with Parasomnia. That's really word for word what Bill created.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I did another job with him called Sleepwalker, which is a television series.
Right.
Bill's the kind of guy like me who will put his own money behind something to make it as excellent as you possibly can make it.
Yeah.
You have to be very weary with the systems within Hollywood. With the systems of Hollywood. If you don't know those systems inside and out. And a lot of great talented people don't. They haven't been exposed to it, and I think that's the problem that happened with Parasomnia. I have to follow up and find out. I've called over there a couple of times.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on with him, but he certainly should be creating and
he should
be fostering something, but I know the whole project took him to the you know, the edge of financial abuse. So,
and I was saddened to learn that in your book. I really was, because that was a story that actually I was a part of for a little bit, and I, you know, always wondered what happened to Bill Malone. You know, it doesn't seem like he's done anything since then.
It's the Bill. When I consult with films, any filmmaker who doesn't learn distribution inside and out, and contracts inside and out, is
right.
They're going to make money on your project.
Right.
But you're going to end up in a hole. And that's just something that, so I really try to counsel that when I get involved in a film. It's no good for me to be a lead actor in a film that doesn't even realize its goals as a dramatic exercise.
Right.
As a business model.
Well, I miss them. I'm sorry. Yeah, I was saying I miss him, and quite honestly, if you do manage to get a hold of him, please tell him Gino at Upcoming Disc was asking about him for a long time, and I hope that he's okay, but your book kind of filled in a missing chapter that I always wondered about.
Well, there's a lot of them coming in Volume 2. A lot of missing chapters, and a lot of hilarity, and a lot of... Volume 2 is all show business all the time. And,
yeah.
And it's
well, that's what I wanted to finish with, and find out. So, what is the breakdown here? Is this expected as a trilogy? Because you make it obvious this is the first part of something. So, what is the plan going forward?
No, there's just Volume 2 on this.
Okay.
We got to set up the book tour for Volume 2. It's already written.
Yeah.
But I'm polishing it right now, really implementing what I learned from Volume 1, Sure, there's no repetition.
Right.
Well, to bring it up right up to the current day.
Yeah.
Volume two is show business. The subhead is dying for living show business, and then the subhead rather than sins and confessions of a Hollywood villain and libertine patriot, subhead is wasted talent in the valley of debacle.
Wow.
I'm on my fourth or fifth movie where the leading man didn't have enough brain power to learn his own lines. I'm having a tremendous fun with that.
Yeah.
If somebody likes sci-fi, if somebody likes westerns, if somebody likes World War II movies or Vietnam movies, whatever I've been allowed to, or television,
right.
Film, that's what Volume 2 deals with, is the specifics of Hollywood, the criminality that's occurring here. And I call Hollywood the culture of theft. The pitfalls of distribution and financing and all those things that are going on there, as well as all the salacious womanizing.
So this book tour, will it take you to Tampa, Florida?
You know, I don't have a date yet, but I'm supposed to go to, how far are you from Coral Gables?
I think about an hour, hour and a half, but I'd come say hi.
No, well, what we do is, I've got a Coral Gables that's going to be scheduled for book two, and we'll come down and do something in Tampa as well. And,
yeah.
That'll be publicized well in advance. Right now, what's on tap is I'm going social media dark for a couple of months,
okay,
so that I can finish the polish on volume two.
Right.
And then I'm going to Cartagena, and I have a book signing in Cartagena, and then on a Caribbean island, so that. That should be fun, and I'm also going to get married in Cartagena.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And then in September, we have a Rocky Mountain fly fishing expedition / book signing.
Cool.
Right now, we have a book signing at the Telluride Film Festival, September 2nd.
Yeah.
And one in Denver at Tattered Bookstore on September August 28th.
Right.
Because I want to do some fly fishing. These book signings, you want to do it when you're going to that area of the country anyway.
And have some fun.
So, we will be in Florida sooner or later, and I'll certainly give you a jingle for that.
Yeah, I hope you do. I would definitely cover it for you. And also, if there's a website you'd like me to put out there with the podcast here, so that people can keep an eye on your schedule, figure out when the next book's coming out.
They can do all of that at patrickkilpatrick.com.
Okay.
And they can also order, if they can't get to a signing, they can order a autograph copy through that, the Emporium page, which it'll take you to.
Okay.
And that's easy enough. If they order the book through, and there's Audible, there's paperback, there's hardcover,
right,
through Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Right.
I love it. It's sometimes if they go to Barnes & Noble's and Amazon.com, because then, as a certified purchaser, they can write a review.
Right.
We've gotten 100% five-star reviews.
Good job.
And we very quickly got a Best of L.A. award. And I'm really happy about this site called Flubbing Just Said. It was number 9 on the 11 books that any 30-year-old male should own.
Right. Okay.
So that's kind of cool.
Good.
But PatrickKilpatrick.com will take them.
I'll make sure we put that link on there, and we'll put a purchase link on there for Amazon as well. I did enjoy reading it. It was unique.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Really, you know, it's kind of like when somebody comes up and I loved you in a particular part. What you really are doing this stuff is to touch people, and so I take it very warmly and happily that you enjoyed the book.
I did.
We worked very hard, both in acting. and yeah. it serves them both as a tale and perhaps as something that they can use in life.
And I look forward to reading the second one and hopefully maybe getting together with you down here in Florida. And it's just unique, and I think that uniqueness is rare these days. There's a lot of originality to your style of writing. It's very visceral, which is not as common as one might expect, and I think those things are to be applauded.
Well, thank you very much. I'm blessed that I trained and was influenced by people that helped hone that.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you taking all this time with me and apologize for missing the first one way back then.
No worries.
And I'm glad we did. I was very disappointed because I was looking forward to talking to you. And then the book was even fresher in my mind. I had to go back and look it over a little bit because I was looking very much forward to talking to you. And I'm glad I finally got the chance and hope we get the chance again.
Well, great. Onward and upward. I'll talk to you soon, and you have a great day.